Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Cool Down. And I've got an invader coming into the office in and out, because she just doesn't know what to do with herself. Clearly doesn't have enough work during the week. But today we have Nick Stothard, the doom and gloom Newcastle fan. He's not going to be smiling much today. We've got Mourinho's English twin double in Matinho. We've got the Dengasaurus Denganator, Wonga Denga. And of course, we've got Oscar Rich, the man with all the stats, week in, week out, Richard Foston. How you guys doing, gentlemen?
Oh, good.
Skip. Could be better. Doom and gloom my side, yeah.
Doom and gloom. What guy are you doing?
Me? It's the same, man. You know me. It's always the same. Inconsistency galore. So you just gotta, I'm just consistently always, disappointed, yeah. So...
You don't know what disappointment actually is. You don't.
Yeah.
I'm gonna take
another level of disappointment.
Whatever you say, I'm taking it with a pinch of salt there. I'd swap shoes with you any day of the week.
Yeah.
I mean, talking about levels of disappointment.
How are you,
Claudio? I'm all right. I mean, it was a busy weekend. We had a good one. Not much from the football front, which was a nice break from a Liverpool fan perspective. You know, when you can watch all games neutral and you don't give a shit about the result, then it's okay.
True.
I don't know about you guys, but yeah, that is not too bad. But let's talk about what happened on Friday before we kicked off the weekend. The Champions League draw, gentlemen. And I don't think anyone here is involved in the Champions League. So it's a funny thing to have you guys talking about the Champions League draw. But nonetheless, what did you guys think about it?
Yeah, some top matchups in there. Some mouth-watering ties for sure. I'm excited to watch the games when they start. I think the Bayern-PSG game stands out for me. I'm super keen to watch that one. I think it's going to be a firecracker.
Yeah, that's got to be the pick of the draws. I mean, there's some interesting matchups there. And I think what is cool, you know, sometimes it's nice to be a neutral. I think this is one of those ones where, you know, it'd be great to have Spurs in there. But at the same time, this is a fantastic one to be able to watch without having my team there. Because there's some really interesting, there's players who are coming through. You look at how Mbappe and Haaland have been playing, and it's fantastic to see what they've been able to. And if they can keep that going, coming up against harder and harder teams, I think that's going to be really cool. And you know, as a Spurs fan, there's that soft spot for Poch as well. So I kind of hope PSG do the business at Bayern. But just because I think Pochettino is a fantastic manager and he deserves another good go at the Champions League. So I think that's going to be cool to see.
If I'm not mistaken, I think if City get through their tie, they play the winner of that game. So
that will be.
So I mean, if Pep is to win the title, he's going to have to sort of get past probably two of the best in the tournament. And not even talking about their draw. I mean, their draw, I think they've got Dortmund, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah. that's not a simple task. It's on its own. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing Haaland there. I think Haaland up against City's defense could be quite a good one. I mean, they've really tightened up City over the course of the season. They're really solid at the back now. So it'd be interesting to see if they've got an answer for Haaland, because he's just been in phenomenal form.
And
there's also that fairy tale story that could be Porto. You know, if they get through the Chelsea game, you know, who would have seen that coming? So that's also an interesting little subplot that's brewing there. It's going to be a very interesting game for sure.
Chelsea with Tuchel getting to the final, you know, he's going to want to right that wrong. He's probably got the easier, if you want to call it, the easier side of the draw. So I wouldn't.
Yeah.
You wouldn't bet against them making a final, or at least a semi-final.
Yeah, agreed.
I mean, if you had to pick any of those teams in that quarterfinal, you would have picked Porto, if you were any of the other teams, 100%.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so definitely the best draw. But from Wonga, who do you think? Who are you backing to win it? I mean, make it to the final. We've discussed the two routes here. Everyone agreeing that the Chelsea route and the Porto, Liverpool, Real Madrid—that's the better route to get into the final. But out of both sides, who are you backing to make it all the way to the end?
Look, for me, I think Bayern Munich definitely wanting to make it there. And I think, I don't know, Chelsea, I just, When I saw them, I mean, the way they're playing with Tuchel now, I mean, everything just seems to be running it their way as well. Especially now they're on that side of their route as well. I just think, not just, I mean, yes, they're playing well as well, and I just think everything is just, it's just falling into place for them. And I think they could actually just go all the way and make it to the final. But if they get there, and Bayern is there, I don't think that will be a very big task and a very big ask of them. But yeah, I think they'll make it. I don't doubt it.
And everyone else, do you guys had to pick a winner?
I would like City to win it. I don't know why I would like it, but I just think that, you know,
it's maybe because they're like the complete opposite of Newcastle. They just spend all the money and bring the right players and have the best manager versus the worst manager.
Listen, I think I've said that they were going to win it for the last couple of seasons because I thought, you know, Pep has to eventually win it. Obviously, I've always been wrong in my prediction. So, I don't know. They're just so good at the moment, but their side of the draw is so tough. I mean, all four of those teams are on form at the moment. They're all very strong. So, I mean, like to pick, if you want to call it, I would say you pick a winner from that side of the draw.
So pick one. Pick one. Stop sitting on the fence.
I said City, bro.
City.
I opened up with City. What are you talking about?
Yeah, but we couldn't tell how serious you were being because it was kind of like one of those children. You know, when you growing up, you have aspirations. I just thought, you know, it's like an aspirational Newcastle fan hoping that's what your club would be. Matt,
I've watched my team in the Champions League. Eh? Don't forget, I've watched my team. That was a long time ago. 2004, 2003.
Yeah, so Richard wasn't even born then, bro.
Yeah. Matty, who are you going for?
I'd really like to see PSG do it just because of the Poch connection. I think they've got some fantastic players. They're playing some really attractive football. Mbappe is really coming into his stride. They've done quite a lot of really good football without Neymar as well. And I think, you know, they've still got him to come back and really hit his form. So I think they could be really strong contenders. And because they're coming from the strong side of the draw, they're going to be in that mode. And one of the downsides of coming from the soft side of the draw is that you don't get into that routine of playing against the best, you know? Whoever comes from the PSG Man City side of the draw is going to have played two really hectic games in build up to the final, whatever that will be. That said, you can never write off Real Madrid in this competition. They love the Champions League. Even when they're playing badly, they go far. So, you know, that's something that they'll also be probably looking at the form of Liverpool and thinking we've probably got a chance here. And then Chelsea or Porto, whichever one, they'll probably feel like they can take it. So I think it's going to be a really interesting. It's certainly going to be really interesting. If I had to pick one, I think if PSG get past Bayern, I reckon they'll go all the way. If I have to put something on the line, if I was betting Claudio's money, that's where it would go.
So you reckon Poch has what it takes to?
Yeah,
to
make we've all seen. The way. We know he can get a team that maybe doesn't deserve it all the way to the final. So it's if he's got a squad that's actually decent, who knows how far he could go.
Rich, what are your thoughts there? I know Wonga's backing. So we've got Nick is saying Man City, Wonga's saying Bayern, Matt's saying it is PSG. And then you, Rich?
I'm going to go with the safe bet here. I just think Bayern are going to do it again. They just, to me, are still in a league of their own. You know, they've got a tough draw. PSG is going to be a very, very tough game. And then if they get through that, they've got City or Dortmund. So there's every chance they could slip up. But I just think that side, that 11 on paper is the best in the Champions League. And I would expect them to retain the title. It's going to be tough, but I back them to do it.
I see them cleaning PSG out.
Just
like throwing them to the side.
Yep, and then next match. That's all I see happening.
It's like a 7-0 drubbing. PSG players lying on the sides crying.
So let's say that. Let's say they do clean them out that easily. Then who do you think they find themselves between the Man City and Dortmund one? Because everyone obviously is backing Man City here, guys. But Dortmund, with Haaland, the way which he's playing at the moment, I don't think... I think that game can go either way.
You see, you saw Bayern Munich versus Dortmund. I think Dortmund were up three goals, 3-0. And then Bayern Munich came back. I can't remember how much they won, but Lewandowski ended up scoring four or something and they ended up losing the match in the end. I don't know about Dortmund and the defending. So it could be a big scoring game, but I'd honestly like to see Haaland score. And I think he will, to be honest with you. Mm. I think he will score, but I don't think it'll be a straightforward call. So I wouldn't even call it. I don't think it'll be as straightforward as people would say, but definitely Dortmund could score. Man City could score. But again, like, I don't think Dortmund has also got problems holding leads, as far as I've seen, especially against the best. And that's what I can say. Yeah.
That's Claudio, who do you say is going to win it? Well, for obvious reasons, is it Liverpool or are you?
I like the fact that Matt mentioned the money in which he'd bet and it would be my money. Because if I was betting, I'd bet. I love the underdog story. I'd be putting my money at a 33-1 on a Porto. Or I think the other one is a 15-2 on a Liverpool, just because I think the winner is going to come from that side regardless. It's either going to be a Chelsea, Real Madrid, Liverpool, Porto, one of those. I think the favorites, you know, they struggle to win the competition because this competition is all about the story and all about the sort of fairy tale that comes along with it. So I don't think it's going to come from that end. I'm telling you, that's just how the Champions League works. Unless, of course, you know, the only guys who broke that spell was Real Madrid when they won it back-to-back. But before they had done that, I think it was from 1990, that consecutively no side had been successful in doing it. So it's interesting if you guys were saying Bayern Munich, they're going to be the first one since Real Madrid to be able to do that. So that's where I stand with it. I'm going either Porto because they're Portuguese and Liverpool because they're my team. I know it makes no sense statistically, but in terms of Champions League football and stories, it makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah.
All right. Yep. Guys, FA Cup results. The first one we're going to talk about is Bournemouth-Southampton. Anyone catch this game? Because all of a sudden, I see Danny Ings is being linked with a move to Man City. So surely something's happening there.
Oh, I mean, Danny Ings has been on form the whole season. You know, he's had one or two dry patches, but he's been banging them in the whole year. And I think it's his move back to Southampton was a really smart one. He works in the system there. I also saw the talk about him to Man City. I think it could go either way. I don't know if that's necessary. I think it would be a really good payday for him. Move along and do it. I saw the article I saw touted him as a replacement for Aguero. I don't know that they'd really slot him in there. I don't know exactly if that.
Generous. You know,
yeah, I don't
is
know.
He, if you, is if he definitely off in the summer? Is Aguero definitely off in the summer?
I think it's a given.
I don't think it's confirmed, but everybody's talking like it's done. And I suppose, you know, people are
using the thing is they've played majority of the season without him. He's been injured. Mm. They've coped. Why would they keep him? He's an expensive player. Rather getting a player less wages. They don't really need an out-and-out striker, despite the fact that they are after Harry Kane, Matt. So that's a concern from your end in terms of where he goes into the season.
Yeah.
But anyone, in terms of specifically the Bournemouth-Southampton game, now they make their way to the semis. Is there any chance for these guys to push on to the final?
I personally, I've watched him play Newcastle twice this season. They are probably the worst team that we've faced, like, on their day. So, I mean, they've proven how shit they really can be. But they've obviously got that. No, they've got decent players. But they've properly rolled over this season. I mean, they've got drubbed a couple of times. I mean, they didn't even show up against Newcastle. They couldn't even beat nine of our players. I mean, 11 of our players are shit. Imagine 9 of them. And they find themselves in the semi-final. So it shows you that there's fundamental problems at Southampton. But on their day, they can rock up and do something. Mm-hmm. Listen, would I trade being in their position right now? Yes, definitely. But I think if they face a City, Chelsea, or a Leicester on form in the semi-final, I don't see them going very far. But you never know. It might be one of those stories, Claudio, that you're talking about, the magic of the FA Cup. You know, they might just go on and find themselves somehow. Minamino, I don't know if he's cup tied, but Minamino may be there scoring the winner in the final at Wembley.
I saw the highlights of the Bournemouth Southampton game, and Nathan Redmond scored two decent goals, and Gineppo also took his goal really well. But, you know, to add on to what Nick said, I completely agree. They have such a yo-yo team this season. They can play such good football, but against us, they rolled over and they've been drubbed many, many times this season. So you honestly don't know what Southampton team you're going to get if you're a Saints fan at the moment. So, yeah, that could go either way.
But that said, you could imagine they're going to get themselves up for the cup. And I think when they have played badly, it's been in these league games where maybe fatigue isn't there or the focus isn't quite there. And I think this is a group of players. There's some solid talent across the squad there. I mean, all the talks been about Danny Ings and more recently Minamino, but they've got some solid players across the board. And I think if they go with the right attitude, I think they could give any one of the sides still in the competition a good run for their money. Whether or not they've got the quality to see it through is another question, but you just never know with the cup. It's one game. They've only got to get lucky once.
Sure. I think their biggest issue is they play a very expansive style of football. And I think when they are too expansive defensively, they're exposed. They're not great defensively already. So if you're playing that sort of style of football where you maybe sort of leaving your center backs isolated, you're going to get hurt. So I think if they're a little bit more pragmatic, they've got a chance because they've got goals in them. Che Adams up top as well with your Danny Ings. You've got a chance against any team. But they've got to just make sure they keep a clean sheet.
All they have to do is win free kicks because James Ward-Prowse is the best free kick taker in the league. Honestly, it's like 50-50 if it's going in or not, from distance.
Literally like a penalty.
He bangs them so well. So yeah, he's got every chance from distance.
Doesn't he have the highest conversion rates across Europe? I don't know if that's an accurate stat, but I heard someone
I wouldn't be surprised if he does.
Yeah.
Because he's been
All right, guys, but the next one, Everton, Man City, Wonga Denga. Man City, I mean, Pumalani's already commented on the fact that Man City to clean pretty much everything here. I mean, Everton, you'd like to think with Angelotti, we're trying to get something out of this, right? I mean, most teams would like to get something out of it, but realistically, in the end, Man City too strong. What are your thoughts here? Is this a walk away, another trophy in the bag for City, Wonga?
Yeah, I mean, the way they were playing, I mean, Everton, look where they're on the log, but also in the start of the season, while going slow, you think they'd put something up against Man City. I think... Sterling... You couldn't see how Everton were going to score. I mean, but City, I mean, all over them. I mean, the keeper made a good save in the beginning from Sterling. But then, later these guys end up finishing it. I mean, it was Laporte who ran the ball up front, took the ball all the way up front, passed it into to De Bruyne. They got it back to him. He's the one who ended up taking a shot, hit the post. And Gundogan ended up finishing it. I mean, like you said, I mean, Man City don't need a striker up there, and they can still win games. But I think De Bruyne as well. His goal, geez, he could have passed it, but you could see that yes, he wanted to score. He was not going to pass the ball at all. He just wanted to score, and it shows like the kind of confidence all these players are in right now. They just want to be banging goals. And the FA Cup, I think Man City probably will go all the way through and pick it up.
Well, Wonga, how was Raheem Sterling's performance? Because a lot of question marks coming out of there. And the only reason I'm asking you is because I've made comments previously that Saka reminds me of a young Sterling, but with more of an end product, which is quite exciting, in my opinion, for the neutral and more so for an Arsenal fan. But in terms of Sterling going forward at the City, do you see a long-term future with him and City?
Yeah, look, Sterling, like you said, I mean, when he was at Liverpool, I think, yes, I mean, I wouldn't even compare him to Saka. Jeez, the guy one-on-one was amazing. He was causing people problems down that left wing or right wing, wherever Rodgers would play him. But his only problem was he was getting in those scoring opportunities. So you'd expect him to be scoring, but he wasn't. He got to City. And Pep Guardiola got more goals out of him. So, I mean, for me, I think at City he's doing the business, even in the game as well, causing problems. Even if he's not scoring, he's assisting, he's pulling players with him. I definitely see Sterling could even finish his career at City. He hasn't lost even a yard of pace at all. Still got it with him. Ball control still there. One-on-one still problematic. And I think that's why Pep would keep him in a squad.
With Sterling, the question for me has always been, I think people, to a certain extent, he's one of those players who's like a victim of his own success. I think that he's played so well during the course of his career. And we sometimes forget he's still relatively young. I mean, he's a bit older now, but a lot of what he did was, he was still really young when he kind of lit up the scene. And I think so now, if he has a relatively quiet day, you know, by his standards, which still means having a really good game, he's still pulling players up, he's still making runs. And you see defenders cuck themselves when he runs at them. They don't know what to do because he's got such pace and such control. And so he's pulling defenders out of position. He's making clever moves. But if he doesn't get any assists or any goals, or if he makes one or two errors, you know, poor touches on the ball, it's kind of focused on and, oh, has he lost it? Is it time to move on? Whatever, whatever. But over the course of a season, you just got to look at what he gives to the side. You know, the goals, the assists, and the space he frees up for other players. The runs he makes are part of why De Bruyne has so much space to do what he does, because defenders have to run and chase Sterling. So it's, you know, that opens up that pocket of space in front of the central defenders for players like De Bruyne and Silva and others to do their thing. So I think for me, Sterling is a hugely important part of the City makeup. The fact, one of the reasons they don't need a striker, an out and out striker, you know, or if we're honest, you could probably put a Manchester City shirt on a surfboard and just pop it up near the goal, and that's good enough for a striker. I think, and one of the reasons for that is because of what Sterling does, the space he creates and the movement. And you often see teams against City, so often the defenders are turning back and running towards the goal. And that's usually a sign that their system's not working, that they're being pulled out of position, running back facing the goal. I know it happened to Spurs a couple of times when we played them. And I think, I often feel bad for Sterling. I think he gets a rough judgment by, you know, he has a relatively quiet day and people are like, oh, that's it, he's gone, may as well take him out to pasture, shoot him in the head, it's done. You know, and I think that's really unfair on what he gives to the game. Yeah, I think over the course of the season, any side would take Sterling. There's none of us here who would go, oh, no, he's not quite my type, thanks, Gov. Like, no way, you'd have him back. Even Liverpool would have him back.
Steve Bruce would find a problem.
Yeah, he's far too quick for Bruce. How's Bruce going to send him messages?
But I think he's definitely Sterling. I think Pep has Sterling. It's mostly for that 1v1 aspect. Mm. The same reason he has a Mahrez in the team as well. Putting those guys on the field and they can beat one player, you're turning a 2v1 to 1v1, or a 1v2. You just make it literally 2v the goalkeeper, you know. And I think that's literally the reason he has Sterling there. And I don't see Sterling I don't see that ability of his being nullified anytime soon, especially with the pace that he has and the skill.
Yeah, big time.
All right, fair enough. But overall, guys, is this a trophy? Is this trophy, actually, let's put it in this context, is the trophy, the FA Cup, Man City's to lose despite the fact that they're fighting on all fronts?
I think...
Leicester.
Still Leicester, Chelsea, and Southampton as a wild card. It's going to be a tough... It's going to be a tough sort of...
Gentlemen, look who is here. He's joining us. He's in the house. It's been far too long, Scotty.
He's
saying, lad, I hope you're doing well. Missed a few weeks with training, being different with COVID, etc. Been keeping up to date with your content. Thank you very much, Scott. We always appreciate you looking up, and thank you for joining us. I don't know, anyone have any messages? You know, Nick has been far happier without you here. I'm going to be honest.
What's talking shite, man? He's probably lying. He's been with the missus. I've been seeing all the content with the new missus. Well, not the new missus, but... He's spending a lot of time with her, so I think football's taking a back seat. So
Nick, just be careful. Just be careful. You don't want to out him here on live streaming channel. And also, hey, guys, we got Christopher Lawrence in the house. Thank you for joining us again.
Chris.
Yeah. On that note, gentlemen, the next game we're going to discuss is the Chelsea-Sheffield game. We're still on the FA Cup. Chelsea at the end. We know Sheffield pretty much had no chance in Hull, especially when we're looking at the form Chelsea are in. Rich, what did you think here? Did you catch any of it? Do you think Tuchel's on the right path? Do you think he's actually going to get a trophy? I know we spoke about Champions League prospects, but do you think FA Cup's one he should be focusing on, despite the fact that they're fighting for the top four spot as well?
Look, I think he's got every chance of winning the FA Cup. He likes to play compact football and hurt teams on the break, and there's every chance that he can get through the next couple of games and lift a trophy. In terms of the game itself, it was a game I expected Chelsea to win. And unfortunately, I think it was Oliver Norwood who got her own goal in the first half. But Sheffield United, I was watching a bit of the game and they got back into it. They played some good football in the second half and McGoldrick missed an absolute sitter. from like must have been 3 yards out, and he just headed it back across goal. So that was a gilt edge chance that he missed, and then Chelsea went on to score another goal and win. So yeah, I think Tuchel's got every chance of winning this trophy. It suits his type of football.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, you look, Chelsea is it's a tough place to get settled as a manager. I think it could do him a lot of good to get some silverware in the first season. It'll buy him a lot of goodwill going into next season. I think with that in mind, the FA Cup is a realistic opportunity for Chelsea. They're a very strong side. They play some really good football. Obviously, Sheffield United, we're never going to challenge them that hard. But I think this is a trophy that Tuchel should be looking at winning. And I've got to be honest, Sheffield United must have been surprised themselves that they were still in the cup. Do you think they woke up thinking they had a new kick off? We've got to go play a game.
But do you remember Chelsea lost the final last year? So I think they might want to write that wrong. Lost to Arsenal in the final. So there's an opportunity there to write that wrong and potentially get something. Because realistically, that's probably... If there's going to be the easiest competition to get some glory out of sort of the three fronts, getting top four, if you count that sort of as a trophy versus, you know, Champions League and FA Cup, you'd probably say FA Cup.
Yeah, yeah.
Go ahead, Wonga. Yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Like, it's a funny one for Tuchel because if he wins a trophy... Even let's say he wins two this season. You know how the Chelsea fans are. Never mind the fan, but how management is there. If he's winning it, they're not going to expect any less next season. If he's going on a bad form, it's going to be... Yeah, you know, that's what I'm saying. But I'm just saying, it's whether he wins it or not. You know, if let's say he doesn't win it, then they're going to be asking, hey, man, where's the trophy? And I mean, this guy's just come... last season, you know, so he's always going to have pressure on him, regardless of whether he wins this title or not. So the only person he'll be actually doing himself a service. He'll be doing it for himself with these trophies that he wins. He'll put it on his CV. I don't think it really much matter. For him, he's pushing. I don't think it'll really much matter for the club.
I think that's an interesting concept. You've got to see Chelsea as a side because you know you're not going to stay there long. So you go there and pad your CV with silverware because you're going to have players at your disposal. And then 6 months of bad form, you're out and you can go to another club and be like, hey, but I won the FA Cup 6 months. Like,
yeah. you're pretty much securing a long-term contract somewhere else, like at a family club. You know what I mean there, Matt?
At Everton.
Exactly.
Yeah, but you know, it's interesting. If he does win the FA Cup, to your point there, Wonga, and to what you guys are saying, I think the FA Cup only guarantees him another 6 months. I think if he wins the Champions League, he's got another year. You know, it's one of those where Roman goes, oh, yes, yeah, good job. There's something we haven't won in a while. You get an extra year on your contract. Oh, interesting. I suppose it is always going to be a walkover against Sheffield. But the big shock of the weekend, some would say, and this is an interesting one because Ole came out saying last week that, you know, being the fabric of Man United, you have to win trophies. You have to win trophies. And in this particular game, he swaps out he makes squad rotation. And, you know, this is the result that happens. Obviously, Leicester came in fully focused. Brendan Rodgers saying, fully determined, saying he wants to make history. And unfortunately, the result was, you know, the outcome, Man United getting knocked out. I don't know what you guys think about this. Is this a drop ball on Ole's part?
I mean, to a degree it is, but I think Leicester played some fantastic ball that day. I think they've got some solid players. They've shown over the course of the season they really are. They're a good team. They're a team that's difficult to beat. They're a team that's going to score goals. And I think, you know, I don't think this was to me, this isn't one of the upsets of the cup. I think this was two teams who are fairly evenly matched, came up against each other. Maybe not over the course of the squad, but the 11 on the field, that's a very evenly matched pair of teams. And I think that Leicester were more clinical on the day. I think they made their chances count, and then they were kind of good value for their win. I think it's I think we sometimes underestimate Leicester. I think we forget, you know, with all the talk of what used to be the big four and now the big six, and we often exclude Leicester when we talk about these things, but they are a solid side. And not to forget they're also fairly big in terms of the spending power they've got and the squad depth and their facilities and stuff. They're a solid team. So I think they should be seen as a big contender in this cup. I think Rodgers has made it quite clear that he wants to win something with Leicester this season. He got a taste for it up in Scotland. And Scott will tell you they've got real football up there with trophies and everything. So I think, you know, he's probably coming down here and thinking, let's have a go. And I think that this is probably their serious kind of look at the what can be, you know, if you were going to say what could Leicester achieve this season, the FA Cup was probably one of the things where they thought they'd have a serious chance. And, you know, fair play to him. I think Leicester, we should be thinking about Leicester as a serious contender in this tournament.
I think the other one that sort of, you know, went to the wayside was their European campaign. You know, they had a, you know, Europa League. I mean, Leicester could have found themselves in the quarterfinals, semifinals, but they're obviously out now. And this is a good opportunity for them to sort of stay in the mix there, trying to win a trophy. But remember, this time last season, this is when Leicester fell apart and they fell out of the top four. So, yeah. You know, will that happen again this season? Potentially. But if they win the FA Cup and finish fifth, would Leicester fans take that? I don't know. I think they might do. I'm not too sure.
I've been impressed with Iheanacho at Leicester. Mm. I think he's played extremely well this season. You know, it can't be easy having like someone like Jamie Vardy up top, such a class player. But when he's had his chance, Iheanacho, he's come in, he's scored important goals. Obviously, Fred helped him out a lot for the first goal with the pass back that went to Ryan. He stuck it away really well. But he's someone that's really blossomed under Brendan Rodgers in the last couple of games. So, yeah, it's good to see him doing well.
And there's a nice connection. There seems to be a nice understanding between Iheanacho and Vardy. They're playing some good football off each other. It's not as though they're competing for that one spot. They actually play. There's been some really smart movement between them. In the games they've played together. So I think it's really positive for his development and also for Leicester because Vardy is getting a bit older in footballing terms. And so it's nice for them to have someone who's stepping up and getting involved in the goals. So I think it's really good.
Yeah, and I also think Leicester in particular have had the same issue as what Tottenham have had over the last couple of seasons, wanting to strengthen up front, but they can't really because they've got that out-and-out target man who is going to get the first place. Yeah. So who do they bring in to kind of challenge that player's, you know, because no one really wants to sit bench. But I like what Scott has said here, saying they are the better team than United because anyone, I love hearing anyone's better than Man United. But apart from that, saying Man United have far too many players. And that's also the interesting thing. When you're looking at Leicester, you're looking at what Rodgers is trying to achieve. He knows his squad. He knows his first 11. Where Ole Solskjaer knows his first 11, but he's got the players trying to make everyone happy. And it's kind of in this sort of situation when you are rotating the players and you don't trust all of them, but you have to give them game time. These are the sort of results that you get as a manager. I think Nick can maybe attest to this as a part from when you're coaching and you're playing a player that you don't really trust and you have to give him some game time to rest another player. And these are the results you get, right, Nick? Or wrong, Nick?
Yeah, I mean,
or wrong, Nick.
I'll be. No, right. No. Tell me I'm right.
Tell me I'm right. And let's move on. Right, okay.
No. But I think you find yourself in a conundrum there because if you don't play the players in games that maybe matter less. I wouldn't say this matters less, but managers have clearly taken the FA Cup in recent years as sort of a lesser tournament. But if you need to rely on them in later stages in big games, say you've got a couple of injuries and you need to call on your second string players and they're not ready or they're not tested, then, you know, you might struggle. But obviously it didn't pay off for him anyway. So you do sort of need to try and find that balance. But they do have far too many players that aren't good enough.
So, question, and I know we don't have a United fan here today in Celo, because the man was doing the thing, jet setting. Our GQ model, you know, he's
living the dream,
guys. Living the dream. So, but as a United fan, or as a general sort of neutral audience, where do we think, if we're looking at assessments of United currently, they're in Europa, so there is somewhat of an expectation for them to win that. They're second on the log. They're only 1 point above Leicester in this conversation. So the result is somewhat, like you mentioned, Matt, a probably fair result in the day. But are or should Man United fans be happy with the progress that they have seen over the season?
It's hard to know.
It's such a tough one.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you'd offered them this at the beginning of the season, they'd have bit your hand off, you know. Yeah. You know, go be second on the log at this stage, be quite far in Europe. Maybe you wouldn't tell them which competition.
I think that's the key, though. I think if they were finding themselves in a quarterfinal in the Champions League and this amount of points off Man City in the league, I think that would be a very good season. But the way they went out in the Champions League was just shambolic for me, and just it was poor from Solskjaer. Solskjaer has to take the blame, because he didn't manage those last two games properly, didn't take the right players off, didn't go to win the games. And I feel they should have gone a bit further. But it's not a bad season. I can't really say being second is a bad sort of season. I don't know.
Yeah, we'd all take it.
I'd take it any day of the week.
Wonga, the question is, would you take it, Wonga? Would you take it as an Arsenal fan there?
What, the second position?
Ole got the
Solskjaer. No, near the question.
Ole out.
Look, guys, he hasn't, honestly, you know, I know he's here and there, he's flopping. Just depends what Man United want. But I mean, second in the log, gee whiz. Like, he's competing. I mean, he got to second place. He's, ahead of a lot of other teams. I think he's close. He is close. He's one spot away from winning it.
But is that the problem? Because he's one spot, but realistically, he's quite far.
He's not really.
I think that's part of the problem here is that either the United board are going to be perfectly within their rights to say, we don't need to change anything. He's doing great. We did a right in Europe. We got pretty far in the cup. We're second on the log. Let's stick with Ole, give him another season. But realistically, is he going to take that much of a leap? Is he going to add an extra 20 points next season and win the league? Is he going to go that much further than you? But I think that's the question a lot of United fans are going to ask. I don't have the answer.
True.
But I think that's
part of it. Would you take Solskjaer over Arteta?
Ooh.
No ways.
Yeah,
I wouldn't.
You asked that, you wouldn't. Yeah, because in terms of what if you put it like that, in terms of what Matt is saying as well, it's not literally all the other cups is getting out of them. We've successfully done that except for Europa. To be fair,
Europa, if we're looking at it on paper, Europa's up
a chance, Wonga.
Between Arsenal and United, technically speaking, if you're a betting man, that's where you'll be putting your money, Matt. Yeah. Your own money.
I'm putting my money anywhere near Arsenal.
so I think
if you look at just the times as well, as I mean, you mustn't forget everything that's happened this season. Liverpool have also fallen from grace.
Wait. Let's not go down this rabbit hole. We're not throwing in other teams. The focus here is Man United and the question I want to speak about. And this is what I'm going to ask everyone. I'm going to say this. If you right now, as your club, would you be happy to have Solskjaer at your club with a huge kitty to spend on players coming in for next season preparing your squad? Would you take that right now? And I think that's what I'm getting.
Nope.
Nah.
So if you guys are saying it is neutral.
I'd love money to spend, but the manager knows.
David Moyes? Oh, seriously.
I'd have Moyes over him any day.
Yo. That's
genuinely. Yeah, one's got more experience than the other. The other's finding his feet. He doesn't have a clue at the moment. He's got a lot to learn.
Yeah. Wonga, you got Christopher Lawrence here. He's got your back. He's saying Arsenal have done plenty of rotations and they've actually performed better than the actual first team. So rotations are an excuse for the loss. So... fair enough.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think what we've seen from Solskjaer over the course of the season is that he struggled to impact the game once it started going a certain way. He very rarely makes impactful subs. I think Celo has spoken about it quite a few times. The subs come too late. They don't make a difference. He's putting the wrong players on then trusting them for too long. And you just see, I mean, for all of Arsenal's faults, they've done some quite clever rotations. Some of the young guys, you know, you look at Saka coming in and Maitland-Niles and they're playing really well. And I think, a lot of that, you've got to give credit to Arteta for putting that faith in the youth. You know, not all of it's his choice. Sometimes Aubameyang apparently just wanders off and doesn't want to play football anymore. But,
So it's only when he gets lost on the right way with Bellerin. That's the only time he gets to stay.
Exactly. But I think it's true. I think that the good managers impact games and stuff. And I think that, Nick's complaints about Steve Bruce have been also that he doesn't do anything. He doesn't bring anything. You could leave him at home and it wouldn't change the results.
That's a great change of topic there, Matt. Yeah. Does anyone have the tissues for Nick? Because we need to talk about this. 3-0 to Brighton, fighting for relegation. A game you really need to show some fight
this
for.
Did you guys see the goal? Did you see the goals?
Six goals. The first two were almost like a sort of just replay of one another. Same angle, cut in, boom, boom, bottom corner. Thanks for coming. Cheers. Goodbye. Mm. Yeah.
Danny Welbeck, I didn't expect that from him. Can't lie to you. I'll not even lie to you.
But I think this is what Newcastle do. They make players.
Genuine, man.
So Nick, tell us how bad is it? What's the problem?
Give us the verdict.
Yeah.
Fucking awful. I'll tell you that much. It's dire. It's scary.
But
it's actually like
coming.
Guys, I told you.
Kieran
guys,
Dyer. You want Kieran Dyer in as manager?
I told you guys.
Nick has been singing this song from the beginning. So you should actually just record it from the beginning till now.
The scary thing for me is that, you know, there's so many different conspiracies at the moment. One of them is that he is wanting to actually get sacked. So he's not going to walk because he's got a big payday if he gets sacked. Ashley doesn't want to sack him because he's going to pay that big payday.
Game of chicken where the fans are the losers.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at the lineup, he didn't play with a striker against Brighton, okay? So now you're playing against a team that's won one game at home this whole season, okay? Can I just make note of we were the only team to not lose Sheffield United hadn't won a game all season. They faced us, they beat us. Brighton played at home. They only won one game. They faced us, they won easily, comfortably. So, like, if you need to get a result, you just need to play us. Like, we your team.
Yeah.
So don't be scared. So we don't go there on the front foot. We've got Andy Carroll and Dwight Gayle on the bench. So we start with the donkey, Jolinton, who still can't trap a bag.
Whoa! You're calling Jolinton the donkey? What do you call Andy Carroll then? I'm confused.
Stallion. Hey. Stallion.
Is Andy Carroll the stallion?
guys, we need to really think about the world Nick is living in, where someone like Andy Carroll is the savior, and we need to just realign ourselves to what that must feel like, guys.
You've got to be honest.
Is that because of his long hair and he somewhat resembles Jesus? I'm not entirely sure. You tell us.
So you need to stop taking the piss and listen to me, because this is quite a sad situation. To be very honest with you, Jolinton, I read a tweet the other day that there needs to be an investigation, honestly, on how he got signed. Because, you know, Newcastle were caught a couple of years ago with a couple of dodgy deals, including kickbacks. Ashley, where kickback, like, he is not a professional footballer in the Premier League. Like, he's not near the standard. He shouldn't even be close to our under-23s. So what I'm trying to say is we have two strikers on the bench. Yes, maybe limited ability, but far better than Jolinton. I can tell you that much. You know, limited ability in Dwight Gayle and Andy Carroll. They both stormed down the tunnel at the end of the game. And they never even came off the bench. He brought on a defender and two midfielders for our changes. Very negative. You know, you're losing 3-0. And then eventually the substitutes that didn't play were supposed to do extra runs at the end with the sports scientist, and those two strikers never came out the change room. So there's a big divide in the change room in the dressing room at the moment. And from what I understand is he's given the players 6 days off so he gave them Sunday, Monday. They started training again today. They get in Friday to Monday off next week. And we're playing against Spurs next week, Saturday. Is this guy absolutely clueless?
Yeah,
we heard about that. 1 point off relegation, and his excuse was.
We've got time to get one of the players on our show next week if they've got that much time off?
No, but I heard they've been training. They've been training without Bruce anyway. I read the article, said that the players are used to him not taking training anymore, and they just do their own thing.
They do their own thing. So, I mean, we keep saying, so like there's a big fight at the moment of Newcastle fans and Paul Merson. Paul Merson saying that Newcastle fans have unrealistic expectations of the club. But you know what? All we expect as a club is a team that tries, but not even that anymore. We just expect a club that trains, because we don't even get that.
it's true. And I think it is one of the things you think about Newcastle, and there's certainly for the neutral, and I mean, I don't really have. strong feelings about a lot of other clubs in the league. But Newcastle is one of those sides where you think you kind of remember them being in the league. You remember the team of the 90s, Jim Lehrer and Shearer and that lot, and the stuff they used to do. And you think it's a team that feels like it should be in the Premier League. So yeah. you sort of give them a few extra points every season because you think, they should be here. They bring something. But if you actually watch them this season, it has been pretty depressing stuff. And there are teams, you know, then you look at a team like Fulham, who are really, they give it a go every game. I mean, the last game was the exception. And even Parker said in the post-match interview that they hadn't played well. But that's a team that gives it a go every game. And they, in terms of the players on the field, they probably don't have as many exciting players as some of the teams above them. But that's a team who you feel have probably earned their right to have another go at it. And if Newcastle went down in place of Fulham, could you really blame them? Would you really, you know, obviously Newcastle fans are going to feel it, but the rest of us will kind of be like, well, maybe it's better for the league to have a team that kind of seems like they want to play football for a living, which is clearly, it doesn't feel the case with Newcastle. They do, look.
You're 100% right. Look at Brighton, look at Burnley, look at Fulham. It's to your point. Those are the teams that seem to be trying right now. And Newcastle, like you said, it resigns to the fact either whether it's that whole chicken scenario that you're talking about. I mean, that's just a shame. And it's a shame because we're going to lose Nick to the show too.
He's already started. Remember, he already said he liked City for the Champions League. He's laying runway.
All right,
early next season, he's going to buy a light blue shirt.
And we're all looking for a City fan. So makes sense. Conspiracies. Newcastle's the conspiracy club, and here's Nick. He's the conspiracy fan.
He's just going to rock up with a fake moustache on.
No, but on a serious note, like if we do get through this, it will be the great escape. We've got Spurs next and Burnley. And then we've got West Ham, Liverpool, Arsenal, Leicester, Man City before we have Sheffield United. And
but how? So like, how do you turn this around? How do you turn this around when there's no one?
Our only saviour will be Saint-Maximin coming back and Callum Wilson, because they've single-handedly got us the amount of points that we have. Because Callum Wilson can just
Here's the question, though. Do those players give enough shit about the club? Because say, hypothetically speaking, they're good players, right?
Maybe they're playing for a new contract because they don't want to stay at Newcastle. But if Callum Wilson bags 5 goals before the end of the season, then maybe he goes on to bigger and better things. I don't know. I would like to think that if we do stay up, the takeover happens, Steve Bruce is out, and maybe there's greener pastures. If we go down, we might be a Leeds United that stays there for 10 years.
And you're still holding out for that takeover? You think that takeover? Yeah, you think that's going to be serious?
I think so. Why not? Why wouldn't it happen?
Jeez, just because every dream that Newcastle had for the past 10 years. Yeah,
the takeover won't happen. The takeover won't happen. PIF and the Saudi group is still interested. There's a group from, I think you had spoken about already, Claudio, from America. Yeah. No takeover talk's going to happen while relegation fight's going to ensue. But Mike Ashley still have the Premier League in court. The battle's still going on. And he's not going to fight something and spend his own money if he doesn't think he's going to win. He's a cheap wanker, like, essentially. So he's going to fight whatever he can, you know.
So, Nick, would you take the job? Because Scott's saying he's not sure who'd want the job, even if you guys sacked Bruce right now. I mean, would you take that? I don't even know. I think that would kill your career before it started if you took it, even if they offered it to you.
I don't know. I mean, like, if you look at it now, you know, what does Ashley do? Does he sack a manager and someone goes in? Who would actually take that job?
Yeah.
But like, it could taint you completely. But Steve Bruce is the worst manager in Newcastle history. He is officially that now. The whole Premier League. I think I've already mentioned that he's got terrible stats. So I don't know. You know, you stick with him. I don't know. Is he trying to get fired? I would rather maybe go with one of the assistants there and just give it a full go. Something new, something exciting. But we've already established that's probably not going to happen. So that's my story.
Let's talk about something that did happen on the weekend, something that involves the two guys at the bottom, and there's no coincidence that they're right next to each other, because it was a big game on the weekend, unexpectedly so in my opinion, but it came out flying out of the blocks. I mean, who's happier? Who's not happier? I know a lot of the Arsenal fans are celebrating like they won the Champions League final. It just shows you to pretty much what extent they are at the moment. But Rich, seeing as they took the lead on Saturday, we might as well start with you.
I'm very disappointed. It's crazy the contrast of the two halves, because in the first half we came out of the block super, super quick and raced into a 3-goal lead, and we were playing great football. And at that point, I thought we were going to score 5 or 6. You know, I'm delighted for Jesse Lingard, another world-class finish from him. And he had quick thinking for our second goal as well. Took a quick free kick. Arsenal was sleeping. Jared Bowen got in, put the ball in the back of the net. And at 3-0 up, I honestly didn't see us dropping points. But obviously, you have to maybe look at our mentality. Maybe we got a bit cocky. But Arsenal in the second half were the much better side, and they got back into the game. What annoys me a lot is that we are scoring own goals and helping teams get back into games, like the Dawson own goal. You know, if he clears that, it's a different game. Antonio also hit the post to make it potentially 4-2, and that would have been game over. But, you know, credit to Wonga and credit to Arsenal for the fight back, because it takes a lot to come back from 3-0 down.
Do you not think the timing of that comeback was the decisive sort of turning point in the game? Say you guys hold out till halftime, it becomes a very difficult sort of scenario for Arsenal, where, you know, David Moyes gets the guys focused, regroup, and I think it was still like 10 minutes to play or so, they got that goal, so that you cut those 3-goal lead to a 2-goal deficit. And I always say in football that one of the dangerous leads is a 2-0 lead, because you've got that comfort thinking that you're a bit further ahead than what you actually are, so you tend to relax, and then all of a sudden momentum goes the other way when the other team gets that goal. And I kind of think that's what happened in that half, and they came out flying at the blocks. And I think Arsenal's players came out saying they held themselves accountable, put their hand up, and actually said what the coach asked of us is not what we did in that first half. And I found that very interesting. Wonga, you can have your take now. Rich kind of touched on it, and he said credit to Arsenal. What are your thoughts here?
Look, let me take you back before the game. I watched Tierney. Like I always do, I watch these guys. They talk about how confident they're feeling, how they love Arteta. They think Arteta, or Tierney's word, let me put it like that, says he's a very intelligent manager. And he knows the game a lot, and they enjoy playing under him. And he's always looking, helping them improve their game. Then come match day, within 30 minutes, oh goodness me, I couldn't believe the same thing. I think it was when we first played Tottenham, I listened to Aubameyang saying that they're confident they're going to win this, and they come into the game and it's completely something else. I don't know what it is. I think just the execution is poor. I don't know if Arteta is too clever for them, if they say he's such an intelligent manager. I just don't know. Or what it is. The first goal, yeah, that was a good goal. You can't do much about that. Good pass, great finish. It got me a bit worried, because Jesse Lingard, you know how he is. If he scored and now West Ham take the win, yes, you know his Twitter's going to go crazy. He's going to poke at the fans. thank goodness we did come back. The second goal, goodness me. Flip, geez, you look at, like, I think the only person looking at the ball was the West Ham players and Leno. There was no one else looking at the ball. Maybe Arteta as well, on the bench, and Moyes. But literally every Arsenal player, their backs were turned on that ball. Saka was talking to the ref. Next thing he knows, he thinks the ref's going to pull a line there to tell him where to stand, but the ball's in the back of the net. But yeah, it just the inconsistency was crazy for me. Yes, we did well to come back, but if you honestly look at it, yes, we deserve to lose that. I mean, even in the second half, after we did come back, I think it was just when we were sitting at, I can't remember the order, was it 3-2 or what? But when Antonio hit the left upright, gee whiz! I mean, Ben Rama cruised past the defense like it was not even there, put a cross in. And I think that, like, just summed up the Arsenal performance when I saw that. I think we did well to get the goals. But for me, it's still worrying. I can't lie to you that we can be every game. I think I haven't counted, but I'm pretty sure the last probably 7 games we've played, in the Premier League, we've gone down. Then we have to come back.
I mean, defensively, that for me is worrying. Defensively, big issues.
But I mean, that's in a way, Arsenal never used to be that way. Arsenal never used to have that fight. They used to be really easy to roll over. So in a way, it's an improvement that you guys are coming back from losing positions. You did it against us 2 weeks ago. And I think there is a certain steel about Arsenal that maybe has been lacking for quite a while. If we go back, you know, they felt like a soft touch for quite a while. And that way it's good. I get the frustration. Like if they weren't conceding early goals, they'd be turning more of these draws into wins. But I think Arsenal to me look a lot more solid than they have for a while. And I mean, on the West Ham side, I'm still really happy for Jesse Lingard. I think he's a fantastic footballer and it's awesome to see him kind of flourishing over there. I think.
And he's back in the England squad. He's back in England.
Fully deserved, yeah. He rocked up
in full West Ham kit. That'll make you proud.
What a legend. Everyone's in casual clothes. Jay Lings comes in his West Ham tracksuit. You love to see
him. He's loving the football there and he's such an awesome character. He's just such an exciting kind of footballer. You know, he does stuff. He tries to make things happen, but he does it in a really kind of exciting way. And he deserved a second chance. I felt like he really got a tough rub of it at United. It's always tough at your boyhood club when things don't quite go to plan. It's really hard for the player to say it's time to move on because you've got such an emotional connection to where you are. So I'm really glad he's hit the ground running at West Ham and they found a way to kind of unlock his creativity and really make it work for them. So I'm really happy for him. I mean, as much as it's, you know, pains me to see West Ham doing as well as they are, I'm really glad that it's become a foil for Jesse Lingard. So that's great.
But yeah, I think, the thing is, I hear you what you say. It is a positive. But it, like with Arsenal, like I said, it's been up and downs. Like you saw there was that period, beginning of the season, we won our first game. Then in between, we're struggling. Then it came December. Mm. We put those youngsters on. We got good results. We cleaned up. Then after that, it's a bit of a down. You know, you're losing games where we should be winning, and then
but
now.
Wait. But Wonga, let's take a step back here. That's over the course of the season. Let's put the spotlight on this performance. This is a West Ham side pushing for a fourth spot, and this is a Champions League spot. They've been cruising. Yeah. They've been in great form. They were 3-0 down, and like Matt said, they came back. And when we're looking at a player like Odegaard, I mean, what kind of a performance did he have for Arsenal if we're looking at a thing like looking at the situation? So, sure, the inconsistency is not great. But let's start saying this season's been a rival for most teams. As an Arsenal fan right now, on this side and sort of the positive signs if we're looking at what Arteta is doing, do you not have a little bit more hope in terms of, say they do back him, say the board, they're not going to back him like a Man United back their team or whatever it is, but say they do back Arteta moving forward, is this sort of the good direction for an Arsenal fan to be in right now? Or because I mean we know Arsenal fans right now are very reactionary. It's just one of those things that come along with fan TV and everything else. But in this sort of situation that you find yourself right now, I mean, surely you can't be too disappointed.
And look, Claudio, I think Odegaard has a good game. Callum Chambers as well, defensively still not great, but puts in the crosses. But again, he's put in how many crosses that game that another striker would have probably put in the back of the net. Yes, Aubameyang, Lacazette does well to score his one, but I think he should have definitely. I mean, you train with this guy. You know how Callum Chambers is going to be crossing in the ball. I just find it puzzling for me why no one's getting on the end of those. And for me, the frustration comes in. It's not that I understand. Yes, it's West Ham, and they have a good season. They had a good season, and we did well to come back against the team. That's on that sort of form. But if you look at Arsenal, the teams we've been losing against, I think the same thing happened to Southampton as well. We were 2-0 down, and then we had to come back. It's just, I can't understand. For me, and then West Ham, we actually went 3-0 down. Other teams probably 1-0, 1-0, 1-0. But for me, there's that problem there. And that's the only thing that I'm not happy about. The inconsistency is hectic. I mean, you're dropping last season, what position did we finish? I can't remember now. It was probably like six or something, but we made our
Europa League spot. I would have forgotten too, to be honest.
Yeah, but now we tend, you know, and I get this whole thing of, it was COVID and what, but I can't lie to you and tell you that I'm happy with the performances, bro. I'm not going to lie to you. Okay. And Udogod as well. You see, Udogod's playing well. But he's only on loan. We have to try and make the guy stay. He can be like,
you know, the better he plays, the more expensive he's going to become as well.
yeah.
Remember, if they say now, if we're out of Europa League, we don't make the Europa spot. We don't. Udogaard can be like, hey, but Madrid's back there in Champions League. Oh, I can go find another team to go on loan on. Do I have to stay at Arsenal? It's those things that you look. I'm just trying to look at. It's positive. Yeah, there's positives in the game, but at the end of the day, it's 1 point. We're still 10th.
Okay. All right, Mongo. I need you to take a step back. I need you to take a step back and go. It could be worse. It could be Nick's situation. Rich, I want to say this. You know, you got West Ham here. We know we speak about the David Moyes sort of how he freezes in big games. And even despite all of this, you still said you would take him above Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. But do you not think Saturday's result was a case of him finding himself in a situation that he thought arguably was too good to be true and he didn't know how to handle the situation? Or was it a case of all the players finding themselves in that situation? Do you think it was somewhat mismanagement?
I think so. I think both the manager and the players have themselves to blame. Where I do criticize Moyes is you look at Arteta bringing Pepe on, you know, trying to change the game. What does Moyes do? He brings on Mark Noble. Like, come on, there's levels here. Crazy. I mean, that when I saw Noble come onto the pitch as our substitute, I knew we were in trouble. He wasn't going to offer us anything. So that's the difference. That's the difference. Moyes doesn't have the ability to change games.
I've seen
one
the whole season. Wow.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was two steps backwards from Moyes, and that shot us in the foot. But at the same time, you know, the players in the second half took their foot off the gas completely and they allowed Arsenal to play. So they can both take the blame. But Moyes tactically struggles to make the right substitutions like Ole does at Man United.
All right. So nothing new there. I think what we're going to finish off with is the one that Matt's been waiting for all week. Another win, 3 points. Puts them 3 points adrift from top four spot in with a shot for a Champions League shot, even though it's under Mourinho. And even though it was after a terrible, 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 arguably the worst performance in Europe from an English side ever.
The Zagreb game was just ridiculous. And I think it goes back. I mean, you guys have heard me talk about this thing with Spurs at the moment where positive or negative result, there's a slight frustration with the way we're playing. And it's again, we beat Aston Villa two goals and, you know, Vinicius well taken. It was a tap in the end, but it was a really nice build up. Lucas Moura again playing superb football for us. He's just really doing all the things for us. But it was, again, it was an Aston Villa side who were really accommodating. I think I said it a couple of weeks ago after the Burnley game where Spurs looked amazing, but Burnley really, really helped us in that regard. And it's the same here where Villa, they didn't really offer anything. They were standing off us. They gave us a lot of space. They were very sloppy in midfield, which Moura took full advantage of. They were really poor with their first touches and he was snapping at their heels and taking it back. And, it's one of the situations where Spurs looked really good, but they looked really good against a side that really didn't seem to want to do anything to us. So then against Zagreb, where they came out all guns blazing, we kind of hid in our shell. And I think, you know, Chris mentioned it about Arsenal. Like when they're losing, they go for it. And when they're winning, they're defensive. But with Spurs, it's slightly different. When we go up against a team who has an inferiority complex against us, you know, a team like Villa or Burnley who think we're going to be better than them, we are better than them. We'll kind of do it. But we go up against any team who shows any kind of fight, and we really struggle. We become very kind of almost doubting and we step back. And we did it against Arsenal, where Arsenal got on the offensive and they pushed us and pushed us and Spurs offered nothing and nothing. And it was only the last 10 minutes where Arsenal decided they weren't going to attack anymore that Spurs turned it around and were really looking good, really looking dangerous. And I think in the end, if you just looked at the last 10 minutes, you'd say Arsenal were really lucky to hold on to the win there. But over the course of the 90 minutes, we really did very little. And I think it's again, the Villa game was another example of we can do really good stuff when we've got the space to, when teams don't offer us too much resistance. But I wonder if Villa had showed any kind of fight, if they, you know, if Barkley had had more time on the ball and been able to kind of unlock Ollie Watkins, maybe we would have been a different side. And I think that's what worries me about Spurs at the moment is that we had such a good looking season coming along. And we showed in one or two games what we could do. And now we're in a situation where we beat Villa. Basically, every Spurs fan I know is like, yeah, but, you know, we should have won that. Did you see the state of Villa? And but next week, you know, when we go, it's probably going to be against Newcastle. All of a sudden, Newcastle will decide they want to win a game, and then we'll end up eking out a disgusting 1-1 draw, which will be really frustrating.
Please just give me a win, please.
Desperate times, Nick.
Yeah, but you know, or not. Newcastle will arrive. They're already defeated. They'll have Carroll and Gale on the bench, and stick Joe Linton up on his own, and we'll beat them, you know, without even trying. And we'll be like, oh yeah, look, it's working. Spurs are doing great, but we're really only putting it off against sides that don't offer us anything. And I think that's, for me, that's the frustrating thing when it really counts. Games that feel like we need to do something different, where you expect that Mourinho effect to be important, you know, because you kind of think when you get Mourinho, you think he's going to have some sort of secret formula that he's going to be like, hey guys, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to beat Arsenal today. And that seems missing. It was there at the first half of the season. We had a fantastic game against City, really solid result against Arsenal, completely ridiculous game against Manchester United at Old Trafford. But now that's kind of lacking. It seems like no one's taking him seriously anymore. And when we come up against these teams that push back against us, we don't really do anything. So, yeah, happy with the result. 3 points. I think we're in a fantastic position going into the final run-in. We could yet pull off top four. I think that other sides in and around us have got tough run-ins. I think West Ham have got some tough games before the end of the season. Leicester have got a lot on their plate, also still being in the cup, and they've got a relatively small squad. I think Liverpool have still got a lot of questions to answer about their form. So, yeah, we're in with a shout, but I don't feel confident by any stretch. I think, for all the weaknesses of the sides around us, you look at Spurs, I think there's a lot of weaknesses there too. And we've still got to play United. We've still got to play, some tough games as well. We've also got one eye on the League Cup as well. So I think, you know,
I just want to stop you there. One thing I got from all of this, and I want the other guys to weigh in as well. You spoke about the Mourinho effect.
Mm.
Is the Mourinho effect, has this dissipated completely? Or do you think he has a proper preseason with one or two additions of the sort of players that he wants in the mold that he normally goes after, and things will start turning? Or do you think at this moment in time, Mourinho's just lost the plot and he's doing what he can, and he's actually leaning on the experience he's had previously and actually out of ideas? And this is a question for everyone as well.
It's so hard to tell because you see – In different performances, you see the good and the bad of Mourinho. You know, you look at the performances of Son and Kane over the course of the season. That's clearly something that he's got to have some hand in that, the way they've clicked and the way they perform. Yeah. The change in fortunes for players like Sanchez and Ndombele and Aurier, that can't be down to nothing. I think that's obviously something he's done. Bringing in Reguilon, that was his idea. But at the same time, you see us kind of playing negative football that doesn't suit our style, that loses us points. And you think that's also, it feels like it's from Mourinho's fault, because we didn't do that kind of football before. We weren't a negative side. We were perhaps too attacking, perhaps too loose at the back, but we would never kind of sit back and just and soak up pressure and then end up losing 1-0. And I think that's kind of it's hard for me to say. Maybe I'm too biased because I'm in there. I mean, what do you guys think? Has Mourinho lost his touch? Am I just hoping against hope here?
I hope he hasn't lost his touch because I love him. I think what he's done for football in general is unreal. I do think he can get it. I think he can get a good group of players to play for him. But the problem is when they stop playing for him, I think that change room becomes very toxic. And I think you've seen that at different clubs that he's coached at. I thought it was starting to happen with you guys, but you know, it seems like it's always on a knife edge. You know, you got, and like you've said, Matt, you either click in or you completely not. I think he'll need to win a trophy just to, I think, at least the sort of the League Cup to sort of, you know, spell out any worries.
Can they do it though? Can they win the League Cup? They're going to be taking on a Man City side. They're going to play their C team, and it's still probably going to be a very, very difficult ask. So, I mean,
if Man City are going for the quadruple, that's the first one they've got to win.
Yeah.
I don't think they'll have secured the league by then. Yeah, they might have secured the league by then, but it's the first bit of silverware they'll lift out of the four they're going for.
So you're saying that's a blessing for Spurs because they're going to be looking at it going, this isn't something we want.
No, I think City will be looking at it and thinking, we if we're going to do all four, we've got to start strong here. And so I think they're going to go take it very seriously. It's a final. We know Pep loves a final. So I don't think it's going to be an easy thing for Spurs in the form we're in. So it's really up to us kind of turning around some serious results between now and then. But sheesh, I don't know. I don't feel hugely confident about
it. Listen, if you can finish in the top four, that will be a... great achievement for Spurs if you can finish in the top four, and for Mourinho himself. You know,
from where again, if you'd offered me that at the beginning of the season, it, like I said about United fans earlier, if you'd offered me top four and a final, win or lose, I would have bitten your hand off. So
I think just the disappointing part is that going out in Europe the way you did. I think that's just going to hurt, and I think that will sort of be that will be a stain on maybe actually a half decent season.
Yeah. And it was huge. All we needed was that one goal. And you know, you look at us over the course of the season, you normally back us to score a goal. And we had chances. It was just wasn't quite there. And to concede three, just, I don't know. The whole thing was all very frustrating. I couldn't even watch the last few minutes.
Thoughts on Bale's, did he come out today or the other day?
Today.
Wonga, do you know this? Do you know what's happened? Yeah, your man, top bins. You know what he said? Yeah?
Yes, I heard
he was just make using right Spurs. Yeah, he's just using Spurs as a buffer just to for Wales. That's why he doesn't have a shit. That's why, when he was meant to play, the Oak was like, I'm not playing. I'm injured. That's the shit you get with Bale, your man.
Yeah, it's been a weird season with Bale. There were long stretches of the season where if you told me he was going back to Madrid, I would have been like, well, you know, did he even arrive? You know, it's like, and then he's had six really good games. That said, when we really needed him in the big games, he's been very quiet. So I don't think we'll miss him hugely if he goes back. I think emotionally, there's that connection to Bale. He represents a golden age in Spurs kind of recent folklore. So it's sad to see him go, but realistically, I mean, we can't afford to keep him permanently. He's the highest paid player in the Premier League. There's no way that player should be at Spurs. Highest paid player in the league should not be at Spurs. That's ridiculous.
No, but I feel like you saying that has set a cap on Spurs. The only reason you say that is because Daniel Levy is the chairman and he knows how to like check a budget
How could we afford to play the top salary? Like we're sixth or seventh in terms of wealth and that's not just because of
they're in the top 10. No, but hang on, Matt. They're in the top 10. They're in the top 10 globally. And they are in the top 10 globally. And I just want to say if it wasn't for COVID, with that stadium that they're pulling in, the revenue which they'd have and the money in which Mourinho, I can only assume, has promised to build the squad that he wants to be building, would be coming in. So I think it's just a bit of patience. I think it's waiting for the COVID thing. And this is the thing where the Spurs fans need to balance it out with the performance of Mourinho. Mourinho right now, I can tell you, based on that documentary that we all saw, is that he's coming. He's trying to do something different. He's given the benefit of the doubt to one or two players. And then arguably, if I'm just going back to the Liverpool games that we took on Spurs, that we came away with victories, at the end of the day, you know, Mourinho could have gotten 3 points out of those games. He could have gotten three, not just one. He could have gotten three. He was let down by certain players. And I think it's one of those situations where to move on players, similar to what Arteta's doing, you've got to air them out. You've got to let them make their mistakes. And then you've got to point that case study and go back to the chairman and say, listen, bro, this is shit. These guys are shit. Flog them. And I also think what was quite interesting is that Hugo Lloris, who I've been very critical of late, he came out after that Thursday game saying, you know, there are issues at the club. It isn't being run properly. And he's also saying this come end of the season with his contract expiring. So do you think he's going to stay? No, I don't think he's going to stay. And then we've also got the big question mark, Harry Kane, and whether or not he stays at the end of the season. So where does that leave a manager like Mourinho, who's used to working with the best, and where does that leave a club like Spurs, who you say don't have the most money, technically speaking, right now they don't because they're paying off the stadium. But where does that leave a manager like Mourinho, realistically? And where does that leave Spurs? Do they go get Eddie Howe from where he is right now?
Yeah, look, I think Spurs are in a tough spot. I think Lloris is slightly different because I think if you look at how Gazzaniga has been developing, I think there's thank you, Christopher.
Just Chris. He's running out of battery. He's putting a Wonga on us. must be an Arsenal fan issue. All the Arsenal fans run out of battery. I don't know what's going on here. It's maybe because they don't want to watch the full 90 minutes on their game. They're not sure what the result's going to be.
there's you know, with Lloris, it's different because you look at Gazzaniga, how he's been developing over the years. He's been out on loan this season and we've had Hart on the bench. But I think Gazzaniga's like really stepped up. I think he's ready probably for some first team football and I wouldn't feel too bad about him stepping up. Kane is a different one. You know, again, it's that kind of emotional connection. It's his boyhood club. We'd hate to see him go. That said, he really deserves to be winning silverware. And I'd hate for him to do it at another English club. I really wish if he does leave, he goes to somewhere like Barca or Real Madrid or Dortmund. I think, you know, look at him at Dortmund or Bayern Munich. I think he'd just set the world alight. But, you know, it would be tough. I think if Mourinho is going to stay, then he would want all the money that he gets from selling Kane, because he'd want to replace him with something as impactful. And I think it's going to be tough. The decision as to whether or not Mourinho stays, I think it's largely up to whether or not we do win the cup and where we finish in the league, and then whether or not there's faith in that he can, you know, turn around a change. But again, you're looking at for him to deliver on what he thinks he should be able to do. We're talking again, sort of a 20-30 point shift. And does Mourinho have the tools at his disposal to do that with Spurs? I don't know. And realistically, do Spurs fans think that's going to happen? I don't know. I don't know if Spurs are going to challenge for the league next season. It's frigging tough. If you told me that we'd be challenging top four this season, I probably would have been a bit skeptical. So it's really tough. It's our expectation. If you are telling me that we're one of the top 10 wealthiest clubs in the world, I mean, I don't know about that. Maybe top 20, but I think the gap between teams like Spurs and teams like United, you know, that maybe we're you know, on the podium, we're only a couple of spots below them, but the difference we're talking about in wealth here is huge, and that makes a big difference when you're talking about players like Bale who want to earn 30 million a year.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. So a question to everyone before we go: Harry Kane, firstly, does he leave, yes or no? Just yes or no. We're going to start with Rich. And then we're going to end. So Rich, Wonga, Nick, Matt. And then after that, if you say yes, you're going to tell us where you think he's going to play. All right. Mm. So we'll start off with Rich.
No, he's not going.
Thank you, Rich. You can stay.
Yeah. I also say he's not going. I also don't see where he would go. Just, but yeah.
It's these London clubs are uniting, it seems.
Mm.
Nick.
Matty, I think he's gone, eh?
Who's going to buy him?
Yeah, where's he going? Where's he going?
That's the question. Where does he go?
Man City or Real Madrid? Real Madrid or Man City?
He looks really good in black and white.
You know what he's done?
You know, him and Andy Carroll form a partnership.
Pirates. Although Chiefs kind of need him. You saw that stat. Bernard Parker hasn't scored in 61 games. Anyway, I mean, that's ridiculous. It's like two seasons. Yeah. Highest goal scorer. But one thing that's interesting about the Mourinho sort of situation is he's shown Man City and he's shown Pep Guardiola that Harry Kane can kind of play that false nine position. Something that, you know, Man City do work with, which is somewhat troublesome. So I'm saying the man's going to have ask himself a serious thing. Does it become a Gerrard and stay at one club? The only difference was Gerrard still won a lot of things. I mean, Harry Kane is starving there, and it's now or never for him. And Scott's come out. This is a big shot. Man United. We also think, I mean, Cedo's not yet to defend himself. And I think Man United are getting tired with the likes of Martial. So they will be looking for a striker, whether that's in the form of Haaland. And also the question is, who do Man City target? Do they go after Kane or do they go after Haaland, guys?
They could go after both. They got all the money in the world. Yeah. They could buy both and just make one whole the other one. Could.
Sounds like a Gwen Stefani song there, No Doubt. It's like, if I had all the money in the world. Anyway. Wonga, what would you say there? Haaland or Kane?
Well, look, he was. That's as Haaland is brutal. Kane is more. Got more bit of finesse in him. I don't know. They both score goals. It just depends on you. If you want goals, get buy one of them. I think I agree with Matt on that one. You've got the money, just buy one of them. Buy both. They both score goals.
I think City can afford to spend big on someone like Haaland because he's young and they'll know he'll, you know, it. Or they could buy Kane now and wait for a couple of years and then get Haaland. Like they've got the money to. It's not like they have to worry about sell on value if it comes to that. So. You know, it saddens me, but yeah, I mean, someone like United or City could come in and be an attractive option.
Sit down tight, Matt, because Scott's coming out saying
City. Mikel Antonio is not going to City, Scott.
I think he means that other Messi. You know, that it's not the older version.
The Jamaican Messi, not the Argentine. All right, guys, and that pretty much wraps up the show today. Any final thoughts before we bounce?
Say a little prayer for me.
Yeah, guys.
We're praying for you, Nick.
I think this was the turning point. The loss to Brighton, when I did, you know, I did that little predictor for, and I always said Newcastle were going to beat Brighton. I always said that was, they were going to get points there, kind of, because it was such an important game.
That's what I said as well.
Yeah. And I think that's, that for me, that represents a really worrying turning point. The, not just the loss, but the manner of it. So I think, ooh, everything you said, Nick, we need to go find those recordings from weeks ago when we were all like, calm down, mate. You're not going down. Relax. Yeah. And now here we are like, sorry, dude, you were right all along.
Turns out he knows what he's talking about, eh?
Yeah, not just a pretty face.
So you guys are going to have to get me in like Dermot Gallagher and speak about VAR decisions, and I'm just going to be neutral and not speak about anything. Ah, crossing over to Dermot.
Nah, we're gonna fit you out in a sky blue shirt and see how that pans out and see whether or not Scotty approves. Yeah. Right, guys, thanks, and guys. That pretty much wraps up the show for today. And remember, if you don't know what to
be cool.
Be cool.
DJ Lingard.
Be cool.
Oh, that's the one. That's the one. All right. Cheers, everyone. See you guys on Thursday for pre-match Mooty. Same time. Cheers, guys. Cheers.